This is CliffCentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Threaded Exchange with Siya Beile, live on Cliff Central.
This is Siya Wanga Beile on a Tuesday, bringing you the Threaded Exchange, conversations that are cultured, brave, and progressive. I'm so excited for the show today. I feel like God is in the room. You know, whatever you're battling out there, you're feeling like your spirit is dying, you're at work, you feel bored, you feel uninspired. This is the perfect destination for you today. I'm Siya Bonga Beile, and I am the official host of the Thread Exchange on the best broadcasting station in the world, and that is CliffCentral.com. Thank you so much for all of you that gave us amazing feedback for our conversation last week with Lazi Matebula. Please make sure you catch up on our podcasts. They always play online straight after the show. We always upload them. So you can listen to them, listen to Lazi, listen to Asanda. There's just a great group of people that can really, really inspire you today. You know how I like to start the show? I always believe that, like, since I can't see you guys and since you're listening there at work, I always feel like I always have to do something to bring up the energy, because this show is really exciting. You know, being black is an amazing thing. You know what I'm saying? And this show is about inspiring each other as people of color in South Africa. And most importantly, talking about our struggles, talking about the things that we're fighting, talking about the careers that we're pursuing, talking about all a bunch of stuff that we just struggle with today. This show has no structure. Literally, it's a conversation. And today I've got a really, really special guest. A lot of you might have seen him online. He's been trending since Black Panther came out. His name is Loyiso Mkhize, who is the founder of Kwezi Comics. But beyond that, he's just an incredible animator, incredible graphic designer, incredible artist who's been invited all around the world to share his art with the world. And today we're going to be talking about, what does it mean to be an African storyteller? And more so, what is it like being a visual storyteller in terms of art and illustrations? And most importantly, how does he, you know, fight the patterns of poverty in his family? Most importantly, what is it like building the next Marvel, essentially? Because that's what he's building with Kwezi. So please, while you're at it, I know you're on your phone on WhatsApp. Please have a look through his Instagram. It's at Loyiso Mkhize. He's also Loyiso Mkhize on Twitter. And also WhatsApp us around the conversation. Tell us what you think. If you think we're giving a crap show, let us know. The number is 0797482090. Let's get this party started. This guy is running late. Guys, I have this thing where all my guests are running on African time. So he's running on African time, but I don't believe this is, you know, when things are running late, we always feel like, let's make up for time by playing music. But genuinely, if I must do the show without him, I will, because I can talk until the sun sets. So yeah, let's start the show. I'm going to be playing you guys a song by Demaja featuring Lizwi. It's called Traveler. Yeah. There's nothing more than I love than like South African music. I feel like South African music, inalando, it has that little bit of that thing. You know what I'm saying? But as I told you guys, my guest is running very, very late. But do not stress not. As your host, I will be taking this show. I'll be running the show. I'm not nervous at all. One of the things I want to talk about today that really, really touches my heart is the fact that a lot of us right now, we are feeling discouraged. A lot of us are broke. A lot of us are thinking about quitting school. A lot of us are depressed. A lot of us are facing deaths in the family. Just being young and being alive is really, really hard today. And, you know, one of the biggest things for me is that it always feels like the moment you deal with one thing, it always feels like another hit comes your way. And today, I just want to tell you to never give up. And my life, my experiences have been the epitome of that. And I've never really, you know, you've seen me in interviews, you've seen me address a lot of things, but I've never really, you know, gone off the mic and sort of, you know, tell my story and sort of tell, you know, my journey and why in my career there's been so many no's, but how did I get to where I am today? I feel like a lot of young people ask for mentorship from me. A lot of young people ask, Sia, how did you find your voice? You know, how does it feel to be famous? How do you handle social media? How do you handle haters? How do you handle money? How do you handle all these things, you know? And truth be told, I don't. You know, what I've learned in my journey is that I've just had to grow through failure. One of the things that I want to open up about today is that I was born on the 7th of December, 93. I come from a family that is not rich at all. Probably far from it. But the one thing that my family always had was that we were always rich in culture, you know. And my mom, from a young age, I mean, I wasn't aware that we were not rich in terms of money up until I was in high school. For me, throughout my childhood, I always felt we were so rich. And for me, rich wasn't about, you know, what clothes was I wearing or what car I was driving or what my, I wasn't driving at the time, of course, but what car my mom was driving. For me, how I felt rich was just the love I felt from the woman that raised me. You know, how we were when we're doing cultural events, you know, just watching my grandmother dress up in the morning, you know, waking up in the Eastern Cape and looking over the hills and just being proud of being who I am and being proud of carrying my family name and just being a proud African boy. And my early childhood was extremely happy, very, very happy. Then we moved to Cape Town. I think, how old was I? I think around about 6 or 7. And we lived in Langa Township. And during that time is when my parents' marriage started to fall apart. And that's when in the hood I was exposed to a lot of things like violence. And I also went to a township school. So many people don't know that. They think because I speak English, I went to some model school. Not in fact, I actually went to a school, Kwalanga. And my mom always was a hard worker. She always was someone who dreamt of us having a bigger life. You know, she never used to settle for bare minimum. Even the way we were raised was always about polish your shoes, you know, live outside. Your mind must be outside of the township. Your mind must be thinking miles ahead around the world. So my parents separated officially when I was around about 13. It was probably one of the most painful things I've had to deal with, you know, watching your mom fall apart right in front of you. Watching your dad abuse her in certain cases, and sometimes that abuse comes directly to you as a kid. And, you know, being black and coming from that space, that traditional space, you know, women are always told to stay in marriages and relationships that are abusive. You know, my mom was told that by, you know, my dad's family. But I'm happy that she never did, because if she did, I didn't know where I would end up today. So more so, I remember when my parents split. You know, we went from having this big house in Constantia. Then we had to move into a smaller house that had a leaking roof. And, you know, watching my mom cry every single day and for her telling us as her kids that, yo, I can't give you guys all these beautiful things that you see outside the world. The best thing I'm going to give you is raising you and, most importantly, sacrificing everything and even myself to make sure you guys go to a good school. So I remember literally the day before school. So now in grade eight started on the Monday. You know, I went to Wambo Boys High School. I remember on the Sunday, literally the whole roof of the house we had just moved in, it literally caved in, and literally everything in our household was in water. All my new school books, my uniform, everything was in water. And then I had to stay up with my mom throughout the evening and basically sort the house. By the time I got to school, half my uniform was wet, number one. And number two, I had to not allow the other kids to see that this is the kind of background that I was coming from, you know. Not because, part of me was ashamed because I didn't want to be viewed as someone that comes from a broken family, but also a part of it was pride, where my mom was like, listen, like, just because me and your dad are going through this situation, or just because we don't have money for this, when you wear that school uniform, be proud, you know, you stand for something bigger than yourself. Now, during that period of time, not only did I have to start high school and sort of adapt to this, I had two younger brothers as well who were going to school. And then my mom, within the same year, she lost her brother. She lost, you know, my great-grandfather. We lost my great-grandfather who passed away in the same year. And my mom coming from sort of, you know, a traditional family, half of my family is uneducated. And basically my mom wasn't just a breadwinner in my family. She was also a breadwinner for the whole entire family, like not just immediate family, but for the whole entire family. So she literally went through this phase where she had to bury my grandfather. She had to bury my uncle, and my aunt died of TB. And I remember she used to stay with us, and we had to watch her health deteriorate and get her treatment. And so my mom had to also bury her. So literally going to school, I was carrying so much pain. And more so because now my mom was a single parent and my dad was out of the picture. Essentially, when it came to school, I never got support. You know, I played rugby. I did all these incredible things at school. But I knew I had to be alone, you know. And sometimes I had to sacrifice, you know, not going to certain school projects, not going on night outs with my friends, because I had to go home and look after my brothers, because now my mom had to balance two jobs. Now, high school for me was a weird place. To a certain extent, I was, you know, I was one of the popular kids because, I mean, I did everything and I excelled. But to a certain experience, it was quite very lonely for me. And the reason why it was lonely is because in that school, you know, all the other white kids will be like, yo, you guys are different. You're like the proper blacks, as they would say it. And then when I go to the hood, they would call me Model C. They would say, yo, you don't fit in. You're wearing those khaki shorts. So I grew up around that. And more so, my depression had just started because I couldn't talk to anyone about what I was witnessing at home. As much as my dad and my mom had separated, there was still a lot of violence. You know, my mom tried to commit suicide like 3 times. So I'd come home from school and I'd have to like call the police or call the ambulance. And, you know, so all these things that were happening in my life, and I literally had to separate my school life and my personal life. And I think that's why I've learned, I think that experience prepared me for the industry, essentially, where you have to have your public life in terms of the work that you do, but also your private life that you have to protect. So essentially, for me, it started at that young age. And the reason why I did everything at school is because I felt like I needed to just excel. You know, my mom making all these sacrifices, my mother making all these sacrifices, it needed to mean something. You know, it couldn't just be, I couldn't be average. I felt this pressure of like, I couldn't be average. I had to do something that is amazing. So that's the foundation of, you know, how everything of who I am actually started. It started from that thing of feeling like the only way out of, you know, that situation with my mom was around working very hard. You know, my mom was like, yo, Asnamali, we can't, you know, promise you the world, but what we have is education and the power of you can be whatever you want to be and you can do whatever you want to do. So anyways, guys, I'll continue the story next week because my guest is finally here. You know, celebrities. But I believe in South Africa, celebrities are late. Globally, I've never met a celebrity that's late. So you only Hong Kong a celebrity in my eyes. Wait, let me turn on your mic. So mic 2, mic 3.
This is where we apologize to the listeners as well as you. See, yeah, what's up, man?
Galongo,
how are famous, you? Come on.
Ni famous. Kuta celebrities late.
Not even fashionably late. That actual saying is probably garbage now.
But I was actually saying on air, like, it's actually not a stress because I feel like all my guests work on African time. Literally. Like that's still, I used to not believe in that concept of like black people are always late. But from experience of doing this show, where I do a show for people of color, where we talk about our journeys and stuff, like they're always late. I think you take the title for being the most late. And I'm going to send you a gift.
You know what? I happen to be also Cape Townian. So I think that maybe, you know, you can throw that in there as well. Just for spice. Yeah. How are you, man?
I'm good, man. Life is good. God lives here. God lives with me. So it's
last
amazing.
Time we were chatting, it was like at the Radisson Red, I think.
Yeah.
Early on in the year.
Yeah, that was a wild night.
Let's not even go there.
You're quite a rock star.
Nah, I wouldn't say so, man. I'm just an artist.
Yeah. How are you guys feeling?
Frazzled, tired, stressed. We've got Comic-Con Africa coming this week.
Yeah.
So, and that's in Kyalami Convention Center. So it's the first of its kind on the continent, man. So there's a lot of stress, a lot of pressure.
Amazing. Yeah. Now, like a lot of people, like for me, I don't want to, this conversation, this is not an interview, guys. This is literally dudes chatting and it happens to these mics. Yeah. And for me, like I'm going to chat way beyond Kwezi, way beyond Comic-Con. I think I want to know the men behind this brand. I want to talk about, you know, what is it like being an illustrator that's basically building the next Marvel in Africa. You know, I always say that, you know, as black kids growing up as kids of color, we never think, yo, I can actually, when I watch Superman, I can create African superhero. You don't think like that.
Totally.
So for you guys, like, what, how did this crazy idea come? Because also, like, the reason I'm saying it's crazy, at the time in which you wanted to study it, everyone will be like, yo, this is crazy. Nothing. Because I'm also tired of just seeing Marvel everywhere. Like, as a South African, I'm always like, who's telling our stories? You know, I like Black Panther, but I'm like, but that's not us benefiting. You know what I'm saying? Marvel is a white-owned brand. They're making the money. So,
especially when it comes to the concept of owning your narrative, then it becomes very very important that you have stories like this. Luckily for us, it couldn't have come at a better time when superhero stories, just in general, are the main staple. This globally, in the type of narratives and stories that we consume today, have got to do or have an element of super superhuman abilities one way or the other.
Hi, I'm Clyde. I'm here as well. I'm the co-developer on Kwezi.
Label it this way. Clyde is like, you know the group Macklemore? There's that guy that everyone sees in the music video. Like, the guy, I think his name is Ryan. Yeah. And everyone thinks Macklemore is that guy, when in fact Macklemore is a group. The other guy is a producer. So you're like that guy.
The guy sits in the background. Well,
to find that he's actually a mastermind of note.
As you were saying earlier with the Kwezi concept, I remember I was a naysayer back in the day. When Lohiso had already created the first done the first illustrations, and he brought it my way, and he's like, I need some help finishing this. I need to figure out how to give it dialogue, how to give it life. And I initially looked at the project and I was like, dude, I'm sure someone's done a superhero thing in South Africa before. Come on, how could it not have been done? It was 2013.
End of 2013, entering into 2014, yeah.
Mind you, you had a job at the time.
Oh, hell yeah.
You were doing, what is this other comic with the soccer?
That's right. So I was head illustrator for Super Strikers.
So you're doing Super Strikers. I grew up on
day job.
BP. Yo, and in school, dog, like, I remember at Dukia, Eastern Cape, like,
sure.
We used to come to the nearest BP to get Super Strikers. And I remember when they did it on TV, I was super excited.
And that's true for like so many South Africans. They grew up with Super Strikers, and it's part of what they know.
So that's
what I was doing. You know, I worked there for a good 7 years, and during that time I was honing my skills, you know, like understanding the business of comic books and how to make it work versus will it work or not.
So how do you come up with is it Kwezi? Am I saying it right?
That's right. That's Kwezi.
Kwezi. Yeah, I need to make sure I pronounce the H. So when I look at Kwezi, I always think of Inkwenkwezi type of vibe.
There you go.
You know what I'm saying? I always think of a star that shines bright. And I think in my work in fashion, it's always been about Africans are the brightest stars. So with you, how did you come up with this concept of Kwezi? Because what I'm trying to teach the listeners is that a lot of people are stuck in jobs they hate. And most of the time, they just give up. You know, you are in a job that, of course, you're doing what you loved, but you knew that's not where your story ends.
Correct.
So tell me about that journey, going from working on Super Strikers and then coming up with this idea.
Sheesh, I must have been like 16 when the idea, or maybe just the need, or just realizing a problem, identifying a problem with the stuff that I was reading, reading Superman, Spider-Man, Batman, X-Men, etc. None of these characters were, number one, from Mzansi. None of them were speaking his Xhosa. I'm from Butterworth. So like, you know, every now and then we go to East London, you get to CNA, and you know, you're just so excited just to get a comic book, just to like sort of like inspire Okanye, just something to read that you really like. And grew up as a comic book buff. Realize that, you know, we just don't have superheroes that are South African, dude. And this is like, it's at age 16. And that's when I was like, you know, started really just drawing and started really understanding what I could do with my talent, as opposed to just, you know, just copying what I saw. And so, like, you know, fast forward, I start working for Super Strikers, and the question comes again. you know, when are we going to have a South African superhero? Yeah. Is it going to happen? Is it possible? Does it work? And you know, at that time it was far better because I was working in the industry. I understood the industry. I understood the inner workings of it and, you know, what the possibilities were. So, when 2013 came, you know, I decided to put pencil to paper, illustrated the first episode of Kwezi. So literally pencil to paper, page to page, panel to panel, approached this guy who was working with me. So that was our 9-to-5 illustrating Super Strikers, and you know, and he's sitting right behind. So my desk is here, his desk is right behind me, and I'm like, so I drop these paint, these drawings,
yeah,
on his desk, and I say, hey, listen, man, I don't think I can do this by myself, you know, like. And at the time, it was head colorist. I was head illustrator. He was head colorist. So we already had been working as a team on Super Strikers, and it just ticked. It just worked from there. You know what I mean?
Amazing. And when he approached you with this idea, were you like, this guy's crazy? Is this possible? What were your first reactions in the beginning?
I wouldn't have worked on the concept if I didn't like his art. So when he came to me and I was like, yo guy, this looks dope, this could be a thing.
Yeah.
But then I questioned it initially. I was like, someone else must have done this. And what we found is that no one had actually done this. No one had thought this far ahead. Like Luisa said earlier, we see all these international superheroes. We see things created by other people, but there's nothing set in our context, in the context we understand. So
that's right.
We felt at that point that, you know what, this is important. Let's just get it out there. We need to get it. And we didn't even go out there big initially when we put it out into the world.
Yeah.
We went to, there was an event in Cape Town called Free Comic Book Day, where you get a little table and people sell, as like a marketplace for comics and content and stuff. And we sat there and I think it wasn't even an hour in and we sold out.
Wow.
And so, in fact, it might have even been a half an hour. And we're sitting there twiddling our thumbs, people asking us questions. And back then, we didn't know much about where this was going or how important this concept was. And and from there, it's just skyrocketed. Yeah. The country's hungry for it.
Now, the people, when they saw the first comic book, man, they were like, you know, like, geez, finally, we've got our own thing.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't believe, like, look. Dude, and I'll be honest, you wouldn't believe how important it is for people to actually own their own thing, and because it felt like theirs.
Also, I think the biggest thing is the thing of seeing yourself in a character. For me, that's the power of storytelling. And most of the time we watch these superhero movies, they set up in America, you know what I'm saying? Yellow bus, you know, American vibes. And
yellow
it's
bus.
Hard.
Exactly, that yellow school bus.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, because I'm talking about Spider-Man.
You're right, exactly. Specifically, there you go.
It's like, our schools don't look like that. Like, our education don't work like we come from
different
the
frame of reference. No,
like,
there you go.
So for me, it's always been hard to be able to relate to Spider-Man and even like it, like also like with, you know, Marvel Comics, Infinity War, Iron Man, where I'm like, yo, dude, I'm not that rich. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's saying he's poor, but damn, you got a crib. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, like Spider-Man got stung at this big facility where there happened to be. I'm like, a black kid, we don't even have scientific experiments at that level. Yeah, so I've never seen my character or me being represented like that.
And even the way they talk. That was an important thing in the books.
Yeah.
The vernac that people use.
The lingo.
And the lingo. It's like, and we adapted for, if this, for instance, a white Afrikaner looking character in the book. In the
so
background.
These characters do say Awe. It's like a couple. Okay. I'm also a Cape Town boy, so
So we have long conversations, Lohisa and myself, just figuring out, nah, this guy's gonna be like, we changed the line recently that was at Wat gaan aan? And then and we changed it to Wat gaan.
Because that's how we chat.
And it's like what's important about it really is like We wanted it to first not only just speak to the people that are South African, but like the stuff that only you would know. Like there's almost like an inside joke about
inside
the comic
jokes,
about the comic book, because only you would understand why a character would stand like that or would say, except what kind, maybe. So like, yeah. and it's those nuances that make the story tick. It wasn't necessarily just the aesthetic of creating characters that were, you know, that was celebrating isiZulu, isiSuthu and Khoisan, yeah, our cultures, but it was also just the urbanness of it.
Yeah,
the stuff that,
and also modernizing our stories, knowing where we come from.
Boom.
You know, because I think that's what's missing in our generation, is that because we are becoming so globalized as young South Africans, our history starts to fall away. So by using this as the vehicle, I think is so powerful.
But it's reclaiming the
There's also interesting concept behind it, because if you think us as young people in South Africa, we pick a lot of American Western sort of vernac and the way we speak, we adopt that into the way we speak, and they don't necessarily adopt our sort of vernac in the way we speak. So by presenting something like this, from reading comic books, from watching movies, we start to pick up lingo from other places.
Yeah,
so if we put content out there that just, you know, expresses our lingo as well.
What have some of the challenges been for you guys? So have you left Super Strikers now?
Yeah. So,
Are you doing this full time now? Is this a thing now? Khoisan is a thing? You're running it as like the next Marvel?
For me at the moment, I'm still the art director at Super Striker.
Amazing. That's important. That's important. I think because young people are so impatient. Yeah. Where someone will start something and be like, yeah, screw my job, let me go do it. And then someone ends up being broke for a couple of years. So I also feel that that's important to actually highlight that. So why have you decided that you're still going to continue with Super Strikers while building this? Are they okay with that? And is it a financial decision? Is it because you have a family to feed? Just give me more insight around that thinking.
You're right in a lot of regards. Khoisan has been a passion project for me. As Luis just mentioned, I've been there. I've been involved with it from the beginning.
Yeah.
But I also have certain responsibilities that I've gathered over my 8 years at Striker.
Yeah.
And as in a leadership position, there's still certain things you need to figure out. And,
yeah.
Sure, there's a financial, there's a stability. Yes. In working for a company and still making, and the importance that comic and that company itself serves for the nation. Like you said, you started off reading Super Strikers, so we sort of have a response.
And there's still probably a lot to learn there as well.
Absolutely.
Because I always think...
I can't go without saying that it is important to relentlessly chase your passion and what you really want to do.
No, definitely.
I mean, it is a balance of the two, isn't it? So you have to obviously, you know, acquire some sort of like realism. You have to be realistic about where you are and versus where you want to be. But there is, at some point, there is going to be a leap that's going to be required, and it's not comfortable. Again, I'd be remiss not to mention the fact that this book itself sort of serves as Clyde usually says, as a glorified, business card. The amount of interest in business that we've attained because this thing exists means that you therefore are, you know, subsidized in that way and then succeed, right?
Yeah.
And because that's the idea. You don't want this to be a passion project. And I think as soon as the whole thing with exclusive books, you know, and moving to bigger spaces where the book is now available all over the world for anyone who wants to buy it on Amazon, locally buy it on Take a Lot, exclusive books, etc. So many platforms. And
what you can probably tell is that Luis has been good at driving and building the book. So my involvement in the beginning stages wasn't as prominent, but that's fast changing.
I also think for me is that when we talk about entrepreneurship and we talk about passion, is that we always talk about it, there's always this glorified story. Someone was working at a job they hated, they quit, and then they built this empire. We never tell the stories of
the grit and grime,
and that some people actually build billion-dollar empires while they still have a job and transition to that space. Because I look at so many South Africans where sometimes like I look at them and I'm like, sometimes just quitting your job and pursuing isn't the right idea. Sometimes it's pursue the talent, pursue your passion, but do it after hours. Because at the end
start
of the day,
start off like that, yeah.
Or take or keep your job, but every single month, take your 100 rand or 200, put it on the savings to fund your dream. Because I always think that we always sell entrepreneur as this, I'm a superhero, let me quit and see what happens. You know what I'm saying? And I feel like that's the trap where a lot of kids fail and they're like, fuck, I'm broke. Yeah. What happens now? Let me quit my job. So I think for me, having this interesting scenario where you quit and pursued it, and he's like, actually, there's still a lot to learn. I think that's important, you know, because there's so many mistakes that I have made where I'm like, flip, I could have learned that in corporate.
Yeah.
Under their money.
No, you are absolutely correct. There is a phase where everyone has to make the choice because you stand on the ledge for a long time and you have to decide when you're going to jump. Making that decision and making an informed decision around that is very important, as you said. My entrepreneurial spirit is rife. It's ready. But there's a lot of logistics around it. Luiso, however, is more daring than I am, to put it that way.
Crazy.
And rightfully so.
He's crazy like that.
Should
but,
learn.
But I could say, though, in a sense that also Luiso, not that he has a job, but I mean, he's also, besides doing Kwezi, he's a respected artist. So he can sell his paintings.
His paintings.
Are insanely.
There's that, I suppose.
So there's that also.
I can't even afford his paintings.
Jeez, guys, come on now. You don't want to put that out there, man. Some people still want to buy some work.
Where he's found a way of being like, okay, I'm gonna quit this job, but I know that I can sell these paintings and fund the project as well. So at least,
and that was a lot, particularly in the beginning, it needed to be funded and it was self-published. So I'd have to like look at my girl and be like, hey, listen, man, I need to take like, you know, tens of thousands out of.
Apparently, you're married. Situation. What's that like while pursuing your dream? Both of you guys are married. So what's that like? Because I mean, to be a young 23-year-old pursuing your dream, you're broke, you're starving. But now there's family. There's a lot of things to consider, especially if there's kids involved. There's a future involved.
There's a bond involved.
How is that? Like for reals? Involved, like how is that? Because I want to tell these stories because people don't focus on this.
And then that's a good cue. I think it's a sacrifice. You sacrifice a lot, and kudos and credit to the women lives. That share our lives. Because like they
name them. Shout out to them. What are they?
We can't rule like that. No. We'll keep that.
I'll shout out to my wife, Lynshaw. Thanks for supporting me. Thanks for having my back, babe.
Okay, cool. So, and look, it's a sacrifice, and you. Okay, so when you start this thing with someone and you have a partner, the idea is that you aspire to a particular way of life, and you're creating this life for yourself, and. Again, what is never mentioned is the sacrifice that comes with that. And now you're accountable to another human being. And, so that comes with also it's push and pulls as well. So, it's tricky. Number one, I'm not just the guy behind Kwezi. I'm an artist. And if you know artists, man, like we've got a way, about our lives,
we're
right?
We're just fucking off the chart. There's times I don't want to talk to my girlfriend. I'm like, don't talk to me today. And God is going to deliver something in my life.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And also a lot of the things that we do as artists, and I'm glad you're mentioning that, is a lot of the stuff that we've got is driven by faith. A lot of the stuff is driven by things you can't particularly explain. Yeah. The artist's journey is riddled by so many, you know, miracles that no one can explain, but also at the same time tricky things that you like. Can I cuss you?
Yeah, of course. But listen, like guys, because like you were late,
no worries.
We have to wrap the show in like 2 minutes.
No worries.
So one of the things that I wanna just quickly, because I feel like you're gonna owe me another interview. We're gonna do a whole sit down special.
Oh, we'll have.
But in quick, where is Kwezi going? What's happening at Comic Con? Where can we find you? This is the moment to shine.
Kwezi is going big, like all aspirations. Check out YouTube. We've got a teaser out there. We're trying to get a superhero, South African, proudly South African. Cartoon series on TV. Yeah. How dope would that be?
That'll be amazing.
Has
someone offered you $1 billion yet for the movie?
Still waiting.
Can I offer you $1 billion?
I'm just vetting people at the moment.
Can I?
Can you please just put it on the table, man? We can just sign this whole thing right now. No, so very, very quickly, Kwezi, number one, is South Africa's first superhero. That means it's going to be the first of many things. So, number one, next right now is it going into animation. But before that, perhaps conversations have led us towards feature film. Okay. Obviously, because the world is doing superhero feature films, and that's where stuff like Comic Con is happening. So you have Comic Con Africa now. It's the first on the continent.
Yeah. So when is that happening?
Kyalami Convention Center.
Friday,
Saturday, Sunday. 14th, the Quasi team is going to be there. Yep. We'll be able to buy comic books. Can we buy T-shirts?
Yes, you can.
I want one.
We'll hook you up.
Apparently, I'm a fashion god, so.
And there's a bit of a surprise there. We're doing cosplay for the first time of the characters. Wow.
So we got a couple of celebs out there in full cosplay, you know, potentially that they could be
of the characters.
The characters.
So guys, please check out Comic-Con. It is happening. Also, give Loiso a lot of shit online for being late. So if you feel like this interview is cut short, it's his fault. But I will make sure to catch them this weekend at Comic-Con, and I'll see when they're available for another interview, because I feel like there's so much to talk about that we didn't get to touch today. Absolutely. But yeah, guys, thank you so much for joining me on the Thread Exchange. I'm Sia Beile.
My man.
Loiso, thank you so much for having us. Guys, please, Quasi on social media, Quasi everywhere. Is it Quasi?
Quasi Flyboy. Quasi_Flyboy.
Thank you so much, guys. Good luck for Comic Con. Please keep doing what you're doing. I'm so happy. I'm so proud. And yeah, man. Shout out to the Eastern Cape. I'm going to play up with a song by Takapo called Kelea.
Sure, sir.
This is CliffCentral.com.